Philosophical work on moral dilemmas is a tool that maybe sounds highfalutin, but it's a tool we can keep in our toolbox when we enter times like these. We've been trying to balance the importance of a shutdown to keep everyone safe from COVID-19, but at the same time, we're really worried about friends that are out of work, businesses that are struggling that may not be able to reopen. They may collapse under the weight of the shutdown. We feel that the protests in the light of George Floyd's death are absolutely vital and important. We're on the side of the protesters, but at the same time, we're conflicted when we see small businesses or services for communities and neighborhoods vandalized or destroyed. So we have gone to an expert, and luckily UMD's got a lot of those. Laura Engel is a professor of moral philosophy and social and political philosophy at UMD, and she joins us this morning on the program. Hey, Laura, good morning. Nice to have you with us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So here we have these situations where we have the protest, but what about the vandalism, COVID-19 mm-hmm. shutdown? But what about people being out of work? What are the tools? How can moral philosophy help us unpack these complicated issues and learn how to think about them going forward?
Absolutely. And I think that there are a number of different ways that moral philosophy can help. And I'm just going to focus on one thing that we can think about today, and particularly want to focus first on the protests that are going on after the murder of George Floyd. So the first thing I kind of wanted to point out is that human beings seem to have a tendency to simplify complex moral issues. So when we're confronted with a moral problem, we want to think that there's a right thing to do and there's a wrong thing to do. And if we do the right thing, then there's not going to be any negative consequences or moral cost or backlash or anything like that.
Isn't that cute? Aren't we adorable? Yeah, we think the world's black and white. Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
Well, and it can be difficult, right? We want to make things simple so that we know what to do, so that we have a clear path of action in front of us, or so we can evaluate what other people are doing in our community. It gets a lot more complex, unfortunately. Another tendency we seem to have, or a lot of us seem to have, is that we want to believe that our society is fundamentally just. So, yep, we might have problems in our society, but those are mostly on the periphery. We can correct them, but at heart, our society is a just place to live. And there's a lot of reasons we might think this or might be motivated to think this. Of course, we're all invested in our communities to begin with and in the ideals that our nation and our smaller communities are supposed to represent. And so we have a lot of stake in thinking that our communities and our society are just. Plus, a lot of us, in particular white people and people of privilege, middle class, male sometimes, those types of things, we're generally treated pretty well by our society. So, for instance, I'm a white woman, and most of my interactions with the police have been relatively positive. And so it's easy for me to think of our society as just, but we know that not everyone's interactions with the police are as positive as mine have been. And it can be really hard if you're not part of an oppressed group or part of a group that has been marginalized by our society to understand those difficulties, right, and to understand the oppression that's happening. So anyway, I think that these two different tendencies, to believe that right actions will be entirely good and to believe that our society is fundamentally just, can really obscure the complexities of moral situations and make it more difficult to understand them. And I think that the protests are a really good example of this right now. So the protests that are happening throughout the United States and the world sometimes have gotten violent, right? So we've seen rioting, looting, fires, and violence, all these types of things. And so a lot of people are having a difficult time figuring out how to feel about the protests. And there seems to be this tendency for a lot of people to either completely denounce the protests and say, well, I'm on board with the message, I'm on board with the cause, but I can't support the protests because of this violence or this looting. Or private property damage, Or on the other hand, we might have people who are for the protest and so kind of dismiss the damage that might be done, both to property and to people whose livelihoods depend on that property. So I really think that the concept of moral dilemmas can help us here to get to the nitty-gritty of the philosophy part. So a moral dilemma, its basic features are that if you're in a moral dilemma, you're in a situation where you morally ought to do two different things. So you morally ought to do action A and you morally ought to do action B, but you can't do both of them. You're completely unable, given the situations in the world, to do both A and B. So a classic example of this is Sophie's Choice. So Sophie is put in this situation where she has two children, and she is given a choice about which child she can save, and the other one will be killed by an outside agent. So she has a responsibility to save her daughter, she has a responsibility to save her son, but she can't do both, and no matter what action she chooses, something terrible is going to happen. She's going to lose one of her children. So this is a really extreme example, but it shows how in a moral dilemma, you're faced with two options whereby no matter what you do, something bad is going to happen.
I like to refer to that in my own life as crappy choice A and crappy choice B. And I say to the universe frequently, can't I ever get to choose between which huge lottery winning I'm going to take, this one or this one? Why is it always a choice between lousy option A or lousy option B?
Exactly. And it would be so nice if sometimes there was just a straightforward, good answer to these questions. But it seems like with a lot of situations in our actual lives, there isn't, right? It's more complex than that.
Exactly.
Yes. But one of the things I do want to quickly touch on is just the difference between a moral dilemma and what we would call like a normal moral conflict or some of the moral decisions we make all the time. So a lot of the time when we're confronted with a moral decision, we might have reasons to do two different things. So let me give you an example. Say that I have promised a friend of mine to have lunch with them. They're really looking forward to it. We haven't seen each other in a while, and I've made this promise. But right before I'm about to leave to go to lunch, I get a call from my child's school, and my child is sick, and I need to go right away and pick them up. This means that I'm going to miss lunch. Now, technically, it seems like I have an obligation on both sides. I've promised my friend I would go to lunch with them, so that seems to be a moral obligation, but I also have a moral obligation as a mother to take care of my child. But the thing about this type of case, as opposed to a moral dilemma, is that this one seems fairly easy to resolve. Right? Like your obligation to your child probably outweighs your obligation to your friend, especially if you call them and you're like, hey, I'm sorry, something has come up and I really can't come to lunch right now. So it seems like this conflict can be resolved without something terrible happening, right? Without there being a huge moral cost when you choose the better of the two options.
Right.
Yeah. Unfortunately, in the case of moral dilemmas, this isn't possible. So when you're faced with a moral dilemma, the idea is that no matter what you do, there will be a cost that's significant and that you can't avoid. So to give a more like an example that we can maybe relate to now, there's a lot of people that are struggling to make ends meet in the pandemic because they're out of work. And so you can imagine someone that, for instance, has children and is also taking care of an elderly parent, and they have limited resources. And it might be the case that they have to choose between something like adequately feeding their children and getting a medication that their parent needs. And that's a terrible situation to be in, but we can imagine someone having to make that decision. Now, either way, whether you spend those resources on your children or you spend them on your parent who needs this medication, something significantly wrong is going to happen. So you might be able to say which of the actions would be the best all things considered action, like which you really ought to do. But that doesn't mean that the thing you're not able to do loses its significance, loses its importance. And so that's really what the problem is with a moral dilemma, is that even when you do the best thing, the right thing, there's still some remainder. There's still something bad, something significantly wrong that has happened.
What sounds as though when we are on the It's interesting that we're always on the horns of a dilemma. We're never faced with them. We're usually on their horns, and we can now see why. That there isn't, you know, although it would be wonderful to have a quick fix for this, there isn't a quick fix. Dr. Mary Owen was our guest not too long ago on the program, and she talked about some of the services for Native people that were damaged or destroyed in the protests. And she said the thing for people to do now, if you support the protests, regardless, is to get in touch with those organizations that serve the community, the organizations that were damaged, that serve the community. Get in touch with people. Do what you can to help. Ask them what they need. Help them rebuild. Raise money. Get food together for people that are affected, that don't perhaps have a grocery store. She talked about ways that people could take part to try to make things a little bit better in terms of, you know, without negating the importance of the protest, you know, all right, here were these ugly consequences that we have to deal with. So now we jump in and we try to help with the ugly consequences.
Exactly. And I think that that's the proper response when you're faced with a moral dilemma, is sometimes you just have to accept that even the best option is going to have bad consequences. And so then what you want to try to do whenever possible is figure out a way to correct for those consequences, or to at least mitigate them in some way. And sometimes that's not possible, but it seems like in some cases that is. And I do think that it's really helpful to think of the protest as an instance of a moral dilemma, and one that I think is resolvable, but still is going to leave a cost, a moral cost that we have to deal with. So from my perspective, we have two different obligations, probably more than that, but at least two different obligations. And on the one hand, we have an obligation to fight systemic racism and injustice. On the other hand, we also seem to have an obligation to protect private property and the livelihoods of those that depend on that private property. And of course, the tendency here is to say, well, we can do both. We can just have peaceful protests, and then we can preserve private property, and we can still instigate change. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem like that's actually a real possibility in the world that we live in right now. So, unfortunately, we have quite a bit of evidence to suggest that right now in the United States, peaceful protest isn't super successful. We've had lots of instances of people attempting to protest, such as kneeling at football games and those sorts of things, and they've received a bunch of backlash. And there is some evidence that more extreme measures, such as property destruction, can lead to significant change. So on the one hand, it seems like perhaps to be effective, these types of more extreme measures might be necessary. But even if you're not on board with that, we still have reasons to think that completely peaceful protests may not be possible. And that's, of course, because whenever there's protests of this magnitude, there are going to be opportunists that come in who want to riot and loot and are able to do so under the cover of a peaceful protest. So even if the protesters themselves are completely peaceful, you always are going to risk property damage and violence and those types of things if you're trying to instigate change by massive protests. So unfortunately, it just doesn't seem available to us to always fulfill both of these obligations in this situation, to both fight systemic racism and injustice and to make sure that we don't risk damage to private property. And so my position on this is that fighting systemic injustice is clearly the more important of the obligations. And of course, people can disagree with me on this, but since, like, especially right now, it's becoming more and more apparent, and we've seen this over the years, that systemic racism and systemic injustice leads to a plethora of different problems for marginalized and oppressed people. And right now, what we're focusing on is, of course, the terrible murders of Black men and killings by police officers. And so for me, this clearly takes precedent. Like, we need to start seeing changes, making changes in the system in order to correct for these issues. But that doesn't mean that we can't acknowledge that the damages that are being done are wrong, that they are wrong. Right, that we there's something that we ought to acknowledge and correct for. The issue is just that sometimes, again, if you're faced with a moral dilemma, the best thing you can do is still going to have a cost. And so we can still support, for instance, the protests and say, unfortunately, this comes with a moral cost that we then have to address.
This is a wonderful conversation, also in the sense that it reminds us that things are nuanced.
Right.
Unfortunately, in a lot of cases, our broadcast journalism in particular wants to make things short and sweet and concise, mm-hmm. and that can lead to oversimplifying, and that can kind of play into our need or desire to have things be black and white, good or bad. Mm-hmm. Oh, heavens, this is wonderful. The decisions have already been made for me, and all I have to do is point at you.
Yeah.
You're bad, you're good, situation's bad, situation's good. This is a good reminder for us that things are nuanced and that we do have to balance thing A against thing B. And then what do we do from there? We don't just throw up our hands and say, well, it's impossible. Yep.
Exactly.
Still action to take.
Right. Exactly. So what a lot of the people who work on like moral dilemmas and the potentially unavoidable moral failures that come from it, because there are these significant harms that happen, call those kind of leftover obligations we haven't fulfilled moral remainders. And again, like, if you can do the right thing without having a moral remainder, then you should, but sometimes that's just not possible. And then the idea is, what can we do to try to correct for those things? And we've seen that to an extent with the protests. So both protesters and other people from the community have come in to help clean up damaged property. There have been organizations set up and people have donated to rebuilding communities. And this is the type of thing that we have to do when we acknowledge that moral situations are nuanced. And I do want to make clear that the idea that sometimes the right action still has a cost does not let people off the hook morally, right? So you still have an obligation to figure out the best thing that you can do, to try to do the right thing. But there's a difference between, you know, doing the next to best thing or doing the wrong thing and acknowledging that even when you do the right thing, sometimes there are bad things that happen that still need to be addressed. So it's not saying, you know, anything goes or necessarily that the ends justify the means, but instead it's saying we need to realize the limitations of our potential actions and then address those limitations. And I agree with you that it's really important that we don't simplify these issues, especially because we can use it as an excuse, especially those of us who are more privileged, who don't have the kind of oppressed, marginalized experiences of certain groups in the community, to use it as an excuse to avoid the situation entirely. Like you were saying, to say like, okay, well, you're good and you're bad and we're done with this situation, or to not get involved, or to, in fact, denounce or reject the protests and say that they're a bad thing. And I think that that would be a mistake. We really need to dig into the issue and figure out the right stance and what we can do to correct for the wrongs that do occur.
Laura Engel, this has been a fascinating conversation. Thank you so very, very much for joining us this morning. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And may I just say one quick thing, that if anyone's interested in reading more about moral dilemmas, I highly recommend a book by Lisa Tessman, which is called When Doing the Right Thing is Impossible. And this is part of a series that is meant to bring philosophy to everyone. So if anyone's interested, I highly recommend that book. And thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
We'll get a link set up to that book also, so it'll be easy for folks to find. Laura Engel is a professor of moral psychology and social and political philosophy. She joined us this morning as our guest on Northland Morning.